Live from Blog Talk Radio, Mystical Empress Life Coaching with your host, Brenda Renee.
Good afternoon, everybody. Another wonderful sunny day in Denver, Colorado. I'm very excited to have my dear friend, Gary O. Blanson, today. Gary and I knew each other when I still lived in Louisiana. And we would have the most wonderful law of attraction discussions. And Gary, I think, is probably the most passionate person about the laws of the universe and how we manifest and create our realities. And one of Gary's favorite topics is education. He's very much concerned with our youth and their development. And I'm very, very pleased to have him today. Gary? Welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here, Brenda. Glad to be here. Hello, everyone else.
Gary, let's start out by, now, I to be honest with you, I don't remember when we met. It's been several years ago. But I do recall all of our wonderful conversations. And one of the ones that strikes me the most is when you told me about how you started on this path. You had a job, you were working, and I'll let you finish that story.
Okay. Well, it actually has more than one part, because when I went back and backtracked and researched, it actually started when I was working at Domino's Pizza. When I was at Domino's Pizza, I experienced something that they call inspirational dissatisfaction. That's basically when you stop enjoying your job. So I wasn't really enjoying my job, and I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And then that's when I started listening to radio, because that's one of the good things about driving around in your car is that you had all this time to listen to the radio. And first I started out with Delilah. Are you familiar with Delilah?
No, I haven't heard of her.
Okay. Delilah, she's been on the air for years and years and years. But I started listening to her, and one of the things that she said that stuck out to me was she said, get over getting fired from a job. I got fired 17 times. That shocked me. I'm like,
wow.
17 times. That's at her own show? So then later on, I started, kept listening to the radio. I found Les Brown. And Les Brown, I don't know if you're familiar with him also, but he was labeled through our school system, educated, special classes and all that stuff, and then he ended up failing twice in school. But now he makes $1 million a year speaking.
There you go.
So that's when I first came to him, and then later on I was transferred to another job, and I ended up with Chase. And once again, I got a chance to listen to the radio, and then that's when Dave Ramsey came into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to listen to him, and he started giving me ideas that, no, you're doing it wrong. You have to start thinking about planning your life instead of just living your life, you know, just letting it happen to you. So I started listening to him, and then I decided to leave Chase, and that's how I got to Books of Mix.
And that's where I met you.
Right. And the thing that I loved about Books A Million is that the book, before I got to Books A Million, there were maybe like four or five books that I really had read, I was reading. So it's like the Lord say you want to learn, well, we need to put you in an environment where you can learn. And that's really important. People don't understand how important your environment is to your personal growth.
Yes.
And even though I was earning money part-time working there, I really should have got fired maybe, because they don't realize how many I was going through them books. I was going through the personal development side of it. I was going through the spiritual side of it, philosophy. I mean, I was finding the good authors. I ran across Joseph Murphy, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, and that book lit me up. He told stories and showed you how you can use your words to change. Even in the Bible, it says, and I think it's Job 22 and 28, It said man has the power to decree a thing and it can come to be. And I'm like, man, let me start getting on this here and getting on that there. But the only thing about it is that we have to realize that we, you know how a computer has viruses and all that stuff?
Yes.
The mind catches viruses too. So now me and you, I think we can say for sure that we're going back and getting rid of some of the viruses that we got from our beliefs.
Yeah.
Because that's really how the viruses take hold to you, your mind and beliefs. And one lady even said, she said, if you believe it, you will believe it.
Uh-huh.
I believe it. Mm-hmm. So,
yes,
I mean,
I'm just
learning more and growing more and enjoying more because I started thinking about the vision. Because that's in the Bible too. Here's a story that you didn't know about. Are you familiar with a guy? He used to stay in West Monroe. He died about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. His name is Robert Charles Payne. You want to know what's special about Robert Charles Payne?
What is it?
I only met the man twice. I talked to him 3 times, but I only met him twice. But I consider him a mentor. He's a mentor because everybody are so, we live in a do it, action, society. But I found his book at a garage sale. Then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I found another at Goodwill. Then about a year later, I was doing garage sales, and you know what you have to do before you go to garage sale, right? You have to
no.
get your newspaper. You have to
okay,
get your
yeah,
newspaper
yeah, yeah.
and go through there and see where the good ones are at. So while I was going through that, I had just finished going through where I was going to go because it was like on a Thursday. So I knew where I had marked out the ones I was going to go for on the weekend. I said, let me look through the classified ads to see if anything special sales or something like that. In the classified ads, I saw his name. I said, that's Robert Charles Payne. My book's got Robert Charles Payne on it. So
uh-huh.
it had the phone number, so you know me. I said, if the number there, that means I need to call it. I picked up the phone and I called it, but guess what? I didn't get no answer. So I left a message, and you know, I kind of say, well, since he might not even, well, I knew he wasn't going to recognize my name. I say, let me give him a week before I call him back. I waited a week. I didn't get no answer, but the Pisces in me say, call him back.
The Pisces guided you right.
Yeah, you know that Pisces came up. So I called again. I got his wife. And his wife said, I'm sorry, he's not at home, but I take your number. So I left my number, and I waited a week, but guess what? I still didn't get no answer, Brenda.
It was timing.
No answer.
Lining it
but
up.
The third time I called, I got an answer, and I got him on the phone. And what's even better, he said he was the one who wrote the book. So he wrote the book. And I say, well, would you sign my book for me? And that's when the air went out of my balloon. He said, nope, can't do it today. I say, what about a week from now? He said, no, my schedule is way too busy. I say, well, what if I call you in a couple of months? And it was literally a couple of months later. To be real with you, it was like maybe 6 months later.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
I had switched up, and I had called him on the phone. Some say call him. I had my break. I said, let me call him and see if I can hit him. I caught him at home. He couldn't go nowhere because people was working on his house, and he didn't want nobody to be there. He didn't want to leave them alone at the house while they were working. So I got in my car. I went told my supervisor right there. I said, I got to go somewhere. I went down there, shot down there. Got there, he was there, he met me with a smile, shook his hand, he wrote in the book, and I said my goodbye and went back to the job. But when I got to the job and I looked in the book, I couldn't read his handwriting. You know how writers write chicken scratch when they write
a book? Uh-huh.
So I really couldn't understand it at all. So the Pisces in me again, let me call him back. When I called him, I got his wife. He was still there, but she had to go get him. But within those, it's crazy, within those 5 or 10 seconds, I thought I couldn't read his chicken scratch, but I could. After those 10 seconds, I could understand exactly what he said. And it ended up saying, he said, watch your thoughts because your thoughts determine your life.
Aww.
That's what he said in the book. And ever since then, I have realized what he said was so true because Prentice Morford said in his book, Thoughts Become Things, and all the other people, Napoleon Hill, he says that thoughts become things. So
yeah.
I've been on that path ever since, girl, ever since.
Wow. So was Charles Taine's books very much, what were they based on, law of attraction, spiritual concepts?
It was two of them. One of them was a Maxim book. It basically had quotes and stuff from a religious side. The other one was Become a Better You. It was more personal development, and it was really short. But the sad part about it is that he didn't print. He said he printed maybe about 500 or so of them. It was self-published, not really self-published, but it was a local publisher. It wasn't a big publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter's still around here. I actually went and met his wife and gave her a I actually found another copy of his book, and his wife didn't even have a copy, at least not one in good condition. And I went and took it to her. We met, and I friended his daughter. Her name is, I think it's Laura Payne. That's it. His daughter's name is Laura Payne. She's a friend of mine on Facebook now. All because of that connection.
So have you reflected back? You know, I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the show. When you're trying to achieve a goal and it seems like you keep getting setback, what's this delay about? Do you realize, you know, throughout all that time you were trying to connect with this man, can you look back and see your life was going through all these changes, and when you got to that certain place where his message was really going to hit you with the most impact, you finally made that connection with him?
Right, right. It was really giving me a chance to take everything in, because we don't realize that everybody matures and take knowledge in at a different rate. I can read something and you can read something. We can get two different things. It's the same way with a movie. So it gave me a chance on my reflection and everything to kind of grow into, especially changing the belief part of it, because the new things with the law of attraction and stuff, they kind of clash with what I grew up believing.
And how so?
Think about it. One of the things that, and this crosses racial gaps here, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
Who said you can't afford it? Sometimes, I'm gonna give you a story to go along with this. People say I can't afford it all the time. When I was working at Books A Million, it's a preacher. He came in. This was like 6 different times he came in. Every time he came in, we talked about him wanting a car. A truck. I want a truck, man, I want a truck. He would go to the Rob Report and look at the truck because they have expensive vehicles and stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always go to the Rob Report. We'll have less than 5 minutes, we'll talk about how, man, I sure want a truck. And this fits right into the law of attraction, girl, because guess what? About a year later, one of his members called him to the side and said, how do you like this truck? He said, man, that's a good-looking truck. He said, come on, let's go sign the paper. This is yours.
Aw, I love that.
That's a true story. I did not make that up. It's a true story. The guy is still living here in Monroe. I don't know if he still has the truck that the guy gave him, but he's still here in Monroe.
So he manifested that for sure.
Exactly. And, I mean, that goes against. I mean, I had never heard of that growing up to where you start thinking passionately and fervently and picturing it in your mind. I mean, the truck wasn't exactly the one he wanted, but it was so much like it that it could have been.
I bet he didn't care that it wasn't exactly like the one he thought.
Exactly. It was free. And it was a good model. It was like, let me see, that could have been about 2012. It was like, it's like a 2007 or 2008.
Wow. Free. You know, that's cool that you bring that up. Yes.
Brenda, since
yes.
on the law of attraction, you want to know how I found my house?
How?
Brenda.
Yeah.
Okay, this is how I found my house. Once again, classified.
Uh-huh.
But let me get back before I went to the classified. Before I went to the classified, I picked the area that I wanted to stay in.
Yeah.
So I picked the area, and for about 6 or 8 months straight, I drove through the area looking for sale sign. But guess what? I never saw a for sale sign. Not one time did I see a for sale sign. And about 6 to 8 months later, after that driving around, I was going through the classified ads. So I need to start checking out classified ads again, even though they done got smaller since we done went to, you know, social media online and stuff. But I found the house, and guess what? I was so happy to find the house, I told the guy I wanted the house and didn't even look at the house. He said, go ahead and look. I'm like, I don't need it. Because the price was right. The price was only about $12,000. So it wasn't a fancy house, but it was a house in the area that I want. And see, that's what people got to understand. It's based on what you kind of want and your desire. Napoleon Hill says your definite purpose. Pick a definite purpose, put your feelings behind it, and picture having it. And that's what I did, and that I'm in the house right now as we speak.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, when you were talking about people giving things away, I'm like you, you know, that growing up, I wasn't taught to expect free things. You know, nobody's going to give
exactly.
you anything in life. And I would go in restaurants. It hasn't happened yet in Colorado, but I would go in various restaurants in Louisiana, and I would sit down and eat, and I'd prepare to pay for my meal. And mm-hmm. the owner would come over and say, we're gonna give you that meal. That's on the house. And there was never, you know, an explanation or anything. But I had that happen so many times that it was
right.
just crazy. So, yeah, when you're lined up with what you want, and you know, I wasn't sitting around thinking I wanted free meals, but I was lined up with bigger goals in my life. And when you're lined up, everything that matches – comes flying in.
Exactly.
And you and I have talked a lot about Napoleon Hill, and you know that book has been republished so many times, and that is such a powerful message. You know, he didn't talk in the, you know, in all the new agey terms like a lot of authors do now, but what he said was exactly on point. It's the
right.
message has been repeated in different languages. You know, the Bible talks about all this stuff, but you've got to have the eyes to see, you know, what they're hinting at.
Right. Yep, because that's kind of how we have to recalibrate our mind, so to speak, because, I mean, we've been conditioned to look at it as face value. Jesus in the Bible, he used parables, and he wasn't always talking about. Here's an example. the eye of a needle also meant a gate that the where the animals and the people had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a needle, even though he used the term needle.
Yeah. When we get caught up in the literal of everything's so symbolic, and when we get caught up in the literal, we miss the teaching altogether. So
I agree.
You've talked to me a lot too about how kids learn and how they can be limited by their teachers, or even about the bigger system. And, you know, and what they see is possible for themselves. Would you like to talk about that?
Too often kids get left alone to their own detriment. When I say that, I mean this. Think about it. If I feel that I can't do something, no one comes around and tells me that I can, I'm just going to pour more on it than I can't. And so We have this thing that we call self-talk. I mean, people have laughed at people and made fun of them about talking to themselves, but you can't help but talk to yourself. Your self-conscious mind is you're built. That's kind of like God's way of helping you to think about what you say before you say it.
Yeah.
Now, you might not use that function, but you have that function and that capability to stop and say, hey, this here is a... But in kids' situations, they take it to the negative and to the extreme, to where I'm inferior, I can't do nothing, and then I'm done. That has a big effect. And the sad part about it is that all these conversations going on, and the teacher's not hearing it, the parent's not hearing it, the kid is the only one hearing it between himself, and now he goes his whole life thinking he's a loser, when the opposite is the truth. He's a winner. We have to go through failure.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't get around going through failure, because failure ain't nothing but feedback. That's all it is. We have to teach the kids. It's just feedback, honey. I mean, it just means that you need to change, look at it a different way, study a little bit different. I mean, think about it. I use a football analogy. A guy was failing. He kept fumbling the ball. Well, none of the coaches helping him. He got a new coach. The new coach started studying the film. He said, hey, I want you to tote the ball and move your fingers a different way around the ball. The guy didn't have like 3 or 4 fumbles after this. So we got to start helping kids see some of the techniques that they're using that they can tweak or change a little bit to get a better result. Because it's only feedback. I don't have failures anymore. I have feedback.
I like that. That's good. That's really good. And that the grading system, I mean, now I agree with having feedback. I don't think everybody should just be told they're perfect all the time. I do believe there's a necessary to that feedback. But, yeah, if they were to learn, you know, this isn't failure. This is just something they need to tweak.
Exactly.
So
because
how
I mean,
do you think – go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
How do you think what would you think that the teachers – I mean, we all know they're overworked and underpaid. But how do you think the teachers may be able to be more effective in catching this, these cycles, these spirals these kids get in?
Well, the main thing they have to do is have a relationship with the child. That's the best thing that a parent can do. That's the best thing that a teacher can do. I even read it in a book. It said the most important thing in the classroom is the relationship between the teacher and the student. All the negative stuff is coming from the relationship between the child and the teacher. All the kids that get along good with the teacher, they may not be doing great, but they're not gonna be. I don't really see them making D's and F's, because that teacher has that relationship. Once I form a relationship with you, I'm kind of beholden to you. It's like it's some glue. Lisa Nichols, she says it's glue. I'm stuck to you. That relationship sticks me to you, especially if it's a good relationship. You know, so I think the teacher somehow need to find a way, and let's allow students to transfer from classes if we can, because if the child can transfer out of the class, then let's see if it can happen. I understand that it's a shortage of teachers and all that stuff, but some teachers can actually handle a bigger class than that, you know, that, and the teacher that who got a small one, she can't really handle the small one. But we need to kind of look at the teachers. Really, let's try to get the teachers in a network of teachers who have, let them talk more, because I have heard that teachers don't even really talk with one another enough to see what's working with, amongst one another, you know? So I use this as an example. Do you know that they didn't always have grade separation?
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, yes.
I never really thought about it.
They used to have it to where all ages were in there together, especially at the church. Before the government took over the thing, I actually know a guy. He was at a Catholic school, and I think it was at least 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds all together in the same class.
Interesting.
We missed out on history. We always think, and that's what I don't understand about how we think, why we always thinking that it was always this way. It was not all this way. School has gone through transition after transition after transition, but yet it's this model that we have now that we want to just say that it's the way to go, even though it's destroying so many kids. I agree, some are doing good, but think about it. It really hits home when you get some parents with five kids. That's when it really hits home. Okay. Kid number one and kid number two, they making A's and B's. Here go kid number three, four, and five, they getting dogged out to the point of where they stuck some grades and stuff like this, but they didn't want that for their kids, because now everybody labels that kid as either dumb, slow, and all this, when it may just be that he's not interested in school. I say ADD, I just recently read a book. It said that the human mind is made, designed to not stay stuck on one subject at a long time.
Right.
You want to know why? The reason why the mind is geared that way is because man didn't grow up in a classroom. Let me say that again.
True.
Did not grow up in a classroom. We were out in the wilderness. We had to be ready for a lion or a snake coming up on us at any time. You get caught staring at the water, here goes a snake, you just got bit. So
True. My
whole thing is, forget this AD&D. Let's try to get to where we can even, let's change how we're doing this thing to where, because my whole thing is that, let's start with one question. Instead of giving kids 10 or 15 questions, let's give one question that we can get them to understand and get their thinking process going in the right way. Because if you can get a child's thinking going in the right way, you don't need to teach as much. See?
Yeah.
So I'm like, let's come up with different things. It's not going to be one thing. People are looking for a one-size-fits-all, because that's really what school always tells us. One-size-fits-all, one size does not fit all. Because
exactly.
What works in one classroom might not even work in the next classroom. Walmart is a great example of this. We got a store. Well, really, we got about four or five of them now, because they got the neighborhood stores. We got like five Walmarts. Don't none of them sell the same amount of everything in every store.
True.
And why are we thinking that it's going to be the way in school? Everybody's going to come here. Everybody's going to want to be interested in a curriculum. I compare the curriculum to a cafeteria. Okay, today we have a green peas and lasagna. What if I don't like lasagna and green peas? You think I'm drunk, Keith? Especially if I got a school. A good example is Wiseman. Wiseman has Burger King churches and all that. Kids actually will sneak off the campus knowing they can get in trouble and go get their food, and they have to pay. Cafeteria food is free.
Yep.
They go pay.
Hey, I agree with you. I never ate it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got to come up with different ways of interjecting something new, but it's going to be something different. Buckminster Fuller, he said it. He said that you never fix a problem by trying to deal with the thing that's already in place. He said, just scrap that. Scrap that up and come with something new. We need to come up with something new altogether, especially since, think about it. I get a video of how to do some problems. I get the kid to go and watch the video. He can rewind it. He can fast forward it. He can do all that other stuff without a teacher being my kid. So that's one of the things I see. I'm like, let's start. I mean, there are more. That's another thing that a video would do. A video will demand his attention. See? And I mean, let some music be in the background while he's listening to it. Why he's doing it. I mean, little simple things to get their attention, because that's what they're fighting for, is the kids' attention. Because if you don't have the kids' attention, ain't that much learning going on no way.
You're right. You're right.
But it's gonna be more than just one thing. And everybody has to try to do something different, because everything works with different crowds. Because you got to take the kids. People don't want to put the kids, they don't want to take the count of the kids. I'm going to think about it. If a kid doesn't know, I'm going to use this analogy because it's funny. It's real funny, brother. It was a story about a kid. The kid wasn't but like 2 or 3 years old. Let's say about 3 years old. Had never seen snow before. Never ever seen snow before. But guess what he did see? He saw sugar. So he wakes up, he goes to the one, he sees a bunch of snow on the ground. Know what he said, right? Mama, look at all this shit on the ground. So we gotta think about the kid's perspective. I mean, and then here's another analogy, too. If someone is going to come pick you up at 12 o'clock, that's the key word now, they're going to come pick you up. Y'all said he gonna pick you up at your house. Where do you have to come to pick me up?
At my house.
All right. You gotta meet the kid where they at. See, our school system ain't meeting the kids where they at.
True.
They're meeting where they think they're gonna be at. I mean, think about
true.
It. If I pass from the third grade to the fourth grade, you done automatically assume that I know everything that was before the fourth grade. That's a bad assumption. You already know what we do when assume. We make an ASS out of you and me.
Uh-huh.
So we got to quit assuming. We got to start, and that's going to come with the teacher relationship. I mean, feedback. A C, D, and an F ain't number of feedback. If teachers look at that as feedback, they're going to start pulling that C, D, and F student. Why am I going to spend all this time with the A and B student when I know he's doing what he needs to do?
True,
I'm
going to
take some of my time that I would have spent with those A and B students, get with the C and D students, and let's see what's going on with the kids. You know?
Yeah.
So
true.
The answers are there. It's just that we got to try different things is the answer. Because think about it. If I can get some of the A and B students, and one girl said that she suggested that in a PTA meeting, and the teacher got offended because they saying that the kid is was smarter than a teacher or some kind of crazy junk like that. I'm like, let that A and B student do it, because that's really what school used to be. This is another thing that people don't realize. Before school, what did we have? We had apprenticeships.
True.
We had apprenticeships. You get the kid to go to a mentor-type person. He teaches him what he knows. He goes off and does his thing because he was taught like that. So that ain't nothing more than somewhat of apprenticeship. Instead of the teachers getting offended, it should have been a compliment. You done taught this student good enough to where he can teach another student. Really, that's the whole design of learning, is for you to learn to teach somebody else. That's just like me and you. We have learned things now. We're ready to and want to teach somebody else. That leads me into one of the things that you had asked me to talk about is my youth empowerment thing.
Yes.
I want to get it to where I can get kids to come together and first learn about themselves. That's the part that the teachers and stuff need to try to implement in school too. What good does it do me to have A's, straight A's, have a certificate, a scholarship, and all that, but I don't know who I am? And this goes all the way back to Egypt. They used to have it on the walls. They had it in The Matrix, too, on the film The Matrix. Know thyself. Know thyself. That's the key to everything. If I don't know myself, I'm lost, and I don't even know I'm lost. I got A's and B's. I got a scholarship. And what's even worse, I got a good job, so now I don't feel a need to find out who I am.
I
can just
like
brag that I got stuff. I can just run around bragging I got stuff, and then in the wee morning, I'm going to be drinking, getting drunk and all that because I don't know who I am.
Very good. Very good. Let me ask you this. I've thought a lot about, you know, as long as you're in this world, you got to worry about money and finances and how to manage that. And they don't teach that in school. And that's the most important thing those kids are going to have to know.
They deliberately leave it out because their whole thing, you got to realize, we're in a capitalistic society. It's a guy, I watched a video, and he showed a good demonstration of capitalism and the way they have it set up. He had three different people. One guy was tall. A woman, she was, I just used the height. One person was like 6'3". The other person was 5'11". And the other person was like 4'2". He was like just under 6 feet. And he took out a $20 bill and he raised it up in his hand and he said, whoever get the money out of my hand, they get the money. Now, who got the money out of his hand?
The tallest one.
The 6 foot person got it out. And that's the way school is. The one who's the smartest, they get all the treats, they get all of this, they get all that. And it ain't really about being smart. It's about regurgitating facts.
Very good,
I can regurgitate facts, I'm smart. Who came up with this? Because all you're doing is regurgitating facts. I know educators today walking around here calling themselves dumb when you ask them to do something on the computer. Now, you take them back, you take them to school in the academic world, they bragging, they jumping up and down, but took them out of their element. Because we have to realize, life ain't just academic.
No.
It's more than just academic. So once you took them out of academic, they literally, they won't directly call themselves dumb, but this is what they'll say. I'm computer illiterate. How are you dumb? I'm computer illiterate. But you a teacher and you academic? And guess what? The last time I checked, they selling computer books. Don't you agree they're selling computer books? So if I want to be computer literate, all I got to do is go get a book. And you really don't even have to buy a book. If you can get on the internet, you can, you know, get a free e-book and read about computers. Anything that's taught in the school today can be Google downloaded in a matter of minutes and seconds.
That's exact. You know, Matt, my husband says all the time, well, who cares if you don't know it? There's a YouTube video on it. You can learn it.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. And people are waking up. That's why I see we're going to have a bigger problem with the school system, is because too many people are waking up now. You got it to where the teacher knows that it's not, that it's kind of like a scam because they're not getting paid anything. The student knows it's kind of like a scam because they know they're not really learning anything. I mean, think about it. That A and B student, as long as you're giving him tests on stuff about school, he's going to shine. But what if I start testing him about changing a flat tire? Those simple things like that. He don't know. One girl even put this on Facebook. Her son was making straight A's. He couldn't fix a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yep.
It sounds funny, but come on now. We need to be teaching them little stuff that's going to help them survive in this world, too.
Exactly.
Because I'm like, think about it. What if I can't get to McDonald's? I can't get to a Waffle House and all this? I need to know how to cook at home, something. I mean, come on now. We so focused on the things that lead to getting a traditional job, and guess what? Some of them jobs aren't even available. I made a joke about it just yesterday, how a guy was told to go to school, get good grades, and get a degree. By the time he got, let's say it like if it was 2013. He started school in 2013. He finished in 2017. The degree he was studying for, the jobs that were designed for what he studied for, ain't even around.
Yeah, you make a good point. That's a good point.
We got to start. That's what I love about Stephen Covey and his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Begin with an end in mind. If you don't have a plan or something in mind for your ending, other than what they're telling in the program that you enrolled for your degree, I mean, that's good to have that, but you need something for you, something that's designed to where you want to go, not just that job, because that job is only a part, because so many people, they'll get the job and they'll earn the money, but that's not their passion.
You're right.
So therefore, they're still going to be hungry inside for being filled for what they really want to do. So you gotta take the time and figure out, what do I want to do outside of that job? Because if you go and find out who you are, know thyself, then you can start answering questions about what you really want to be, do, and have. And now you can start coming up with a plan to where, I got a friend on Facebook, she studied to be a lawyer, she became a lawyer, guess what? About 5 years after she's a lawyer, she decided she didn't want to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to be a counselor.
There you go.
Now, it ain't that the degree didn't help her back then, but like I say, think about something else, what you really got to pay. She's passionate about being a counselor. They don't really have to pay her much to be a counselor, because she loves it, enjoys it. We gotta think about that aspect of it, too, because she's earning less money, but she's still making a living. She has a daughter, taking care of her daughter. So she's still making money. And what's even better about it is that if she finds some ways to go along with that, say like write a book, do videos, it's other ways that you can add to your income. It's a matter of having imagination, which we're going right back to school. School kills imagination, because it doesn't take that much imagination to regurgitate facts. It just doesn't. It takes memory. That's not imagination.
True. Well, you know, Gary, this is you bring this up, and it's interesting, because I remember when I was getting out of high school, everybody said, well, what you going to major in? What you going to be a lawyer? Went on to college, was ready, poised to go to law school. nope, that doesn't feel right. So I'd gotten that whole degree program, and my passion was what I'm doing right now. And fortunately for me, I had the courage to go for my passion instead of what education I had. And, you know, I think parents, I probably get a lot of parents mad at me because I'll get the teenagers that come in that are at that point where they're getting ready to get out of high school, start college, they're still unsure. And I tell them, just like you just said, I say, tell me what you're passionate about. And then we'll figure out the money after that. Because if you're passionate about something, the money comes.
Exactly. Because the whole point is self-discovery first. That's what's so amazing. If you discover self, you'll find the other stuff. But if you don't ever discover self, you're just gonna be whatever somebody else wants you to be, and you basically living somebody else's life.
That's true.
A guy where I was working. Do you remember Tyler? He's a white guy. He worked there probably about, he might have been there a year before you, been there a year and left and stuff. But anyway, Tyler and I were talking. He said, this guy's son came to him and told him what he was asking him. He said, how do I tell my parents that I'm not going to use this degree? The kid was about to graduate college. He said, how much time I'm not going to use this degree? He said, the thing that he ended up telling Tyler was, he said, well, I'm just going to wrap this thing up in a gift wrap, and I'm going to give it to them, and then I'm going to let them know that I'm going in a different direction.
There you go.
We got to give the kids.
In favor of the parents, I understand them wanting to get their children a way to take care of themselves. But...
Right.
You're right. So many times kids live the path that somebody else chooses. When I first started, this is perfect for what we're talking about. When I first started college, I went into psychology because I was passionate about understanding people. And some well-meaning adults said, oh, you can't make any money doing that. You need to go into something else. So I chose law, which I do have a passion for law, but not to the degree that I could do it every day of my life. And so I went through that whole educational process, and I tell these kids, look, I got the degree, but do I use it? Yeah, I use the things that I learned on how to college taught me how to gather information, how to communicate information. That's what I got out of it. And I use those tools in what I do now, but I think I could have learned that for a lot cheaper, especially than what they're paying for college these days. And everybody's brainwashed into thinking, I have to go to college to have a job, have money. And I could have skipped that whole 7 years of my life and gone into my passion and figured it out. And what you're saying about know yourself, have a good idea early on. You know, I tell people, I have adults and teenagers both come to me right when they're on a fork in the road and they're trying to decide their career path. And I tell them, let's go back to when you were a little kid. When your friends came over, what was your role? What did you pretend to be? Well, in my case, I was always the teacher and I was always the leader. And I got in trouble all the time because my parents would say, quit being so bossy, because I'd boss all the kids around, getting them organized. So I'm still the leader and the teacher to this day. And if I had recognized that was my natural passion, when a child is small, they're closer to divine energy because they're new here. They hadn't been beat down yet. And if you pay attention to what that kid's natural direction, it's going to make a lot further than slapping things on top of them and telling them this is what you need to do. Hang on second, Gary. Let me see if we got any people out there wanting to ask questions. If any of you guys listening to the show today are wanting to ask us some questions, call in at 515-602-9648 and press 1 to be put in the queue, and we'll be happy to answer your question. Okay, Gary, back to you.
But you hit it on the head. What were our natural program settings? See, school have you thinking that a kid doesn't have any natural program setting, but that's a lie.
They do.
You have natural program setting. All you got to do is go and visit some kids who didn't go to school until they were 11, which you ain't going to find a bunch of them, but find some kids who had who didn't go to school the first 6 years of their life. Their natural programs led them to some of the stuff that they were interested in, which helped them improve their skills in what they were interested in, to where if they had to make a living doing something, they would automatically be doing something involved with their interest by without having to go to school.
True.
That's another thing, especially by me being African-American. I can testify to you that everybody didn't used to go to school. My dad, they only went to school 3 or 4 months out of a year.
And what do we got them in there now, 9 months?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, come on now. I know that things changed to where we're not on the farm and stuff like that there, but it's also changed in the fact that we're no longer in the industrial age also.
But yeah.
Because school came... It really got this big bust and boom when the industrial, and people don't even realize the main reason why it got such a big following is because kids were getting killed in the factories. Because you was able to go to a factory and make big money at 13 and 14 years old. You even had kids getting married at 13.
Mm-hmm.
Having babies at 15. Married having babies at 15. But, and we don't research enough of the history of how things were before, during, and after school to understand that this is it shouldn't be a one set in stone way of doing things. Because think about it. You're in business. You say you're going to do things one set way. I guarantee you, if you start, to, like you going out of business, you're going to start trying something different. So
oh,
why
yeah.
not start trying
if you're smart.
And play with something before you get there.
So this is interesting what you just brought up, and I want to present this to you. Because I know you're watching. I know you're watching. You're a very observant person. So we had, you just said, we had people, teenagers, that were working, supporting a family. And now we've got kids post-college, late 20s, and they still not working, still staying at home.
Right.
What do you attribute that to?
They don't know who they are. It goes back to self. That's what's so wild about it. Have you ever heard somebody when they said, stick your hand out and point a finger at somebody? Have you ever heard that before?
No.
Raise your hand. And see, we're so used to doing it, we automatically do it most of the time. Now you might get two or three people who don't do it, but I guarantee you, at least 6 out of 10 people, when they stick their hand out and point, it's at least 3 fingers pointing back to you. See, that's the whole point. You don't fix somebody else, you fix yourself, and automatically you fix them. Because they gonna respond either by leaving you alone, or you gonna stop being around them. Either way, it's fixed.
You're right.
But
you're right.
You didn't force yourself on them. You changed you, and that's what we gotta start teaching kids. Hey, how can I fix me? Because at the end of the day, I can fix me right now. I could spend 10 years trying to fix somebody else. I can fix me right today. And that's the answer right there. How can I fix me? Because from here on out, I try to fix me.
I get clients who come to me. I had one yesterday. The last question she asked me was, this world's in such terrible shape. How can I fix it? And I tell them, just like you just said, honey, you got to work on yourself. You can't fix nothing else. You got to work on yourself, and what you leave behind is your legacy. But if you're out there focusing all your attention on somebody else, you know, and a lot of these people who do that, their lives are train wrecks. And you're thinking, what are you doing trying to guide somebody else when you hadn't even got it figured out for yourself?
Right.
So that's, yeah, I agree with you totally. And you're right, people don't know. They're very, and it shocks me when I meet somebody that doesn't know their passion. They've spent so much of their life focused externally that they don't know what's going on internally.
Yeah, but you have to understand, it goes back to the child. I tell people this all the time. Think about this here. Parents who most of the time, every now and then it ends up being a child giving birth to a child, but the majority of the time, the adult give birth to the child. Who gives birth to the adult?
The child gives birth to the adult.
Think about it. If I as a child believed in ghosts, when I'm 25, unless I challenge that belief, I'm a 25-year-old adult believing in ghosts. The child gave birth to the adult. And we don't understand that. And we need to try to get adults to see this. And you have to even get the school system to understand that you're going to let this child become an adult invalid. Because that's kind of what you're talking about, how the kids staying at home with their parents and not really trying to
become
be more productive and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You got to help them find themselves early so they can start working on themselves so they can be the real version. We got a bunch of
pretenders.
They not really copies. They just false people, false forms of themselves because they're not the version that God wanted them to be, and they're not even the version that they really want to be inside. That version is still waiting to come out. That side's like, please let me out. Please let me out. I want to get out. Please let me get out. Then the other one says, no, stay in there. They'll think you crazy. Because think about me and you. When we took our jump, weren't they calling us crazy?
Yeah.
They called me crazy
for a long time.
That's what I'm saying. And those kids want people to, they don't want people to call them that. So Lisa Nichols, she called it the big me and the little me. The big me, he's inside waiting to get out. But the little me, he goes everywhere and do all the talking. Some way or another, we got to try to help people let their big me come out. Because the big me is there. I even put this out on Facebook recently. It says, before I was, I am. That basically means you already who you are. You're just not being that person.
True.
You know? So you gotta get it to where now you start incrementally being that person. Because that's what we're doing. Little by little, we're going from the old version of who we were to the new version. Just like the snake, when he sheds his skin, we shedding our skin. People don't see us shedding skin, but then again, they do see us shedding our skin because now they see us doing different things. They're like, oh, you speaking now? Oh, you was on a radio show? Oh, you got a radio show? Oh, you got a business? Oh, all that showing us how we shedded that old person and became the new person.
I love it. So do you think that these kids that, you know, I've heard them say, you know, well, there's nothing I want to do. I don't care about anything. I just kind of want to chill and relax.
That goes back to what we just said, Brenda. The little me talking. The big me would say a whole lot more if the big me thought that the people wouldn't laugh. I mean, think about it. They have said, and I can't prove it, that people would almost rather die than to get up and speak in front of people.
Oh, yeah. That's one of top fears.
You want to know where it started at, though? That started at school. In school, you would have to stand up in front of people and speak. And once you speak and get laughed at, you never want to stand up again.
Yeah.
And then let's look at these two words. And I just came up with this recently. Look at this word, scared. It's spelled S-C-A-R-E-D. Okay, once you get scared, especially at a young age, in front of your peers in a classroom, it's going to leave S-C-A-R. Two different words spelled almost the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When people get scared, they have scars. So they got scars, and because of the scars, they tell you stuff to try to hide the scars. So think about it. If you got a scar, and especially if you got it doing something stupid, you hide that scar. You got somebody wearing a shirt right now covering up a scar. You don't know the scar under there. He knows the scars under there. That's what them kids you were talking about, they got scars,
yeah.
Brother. They ain't going to tell you they got that scar. They ain't going to tell you, I don't know what I want to do. They gonna tell you, they laughed at me. My mama told me I was crazy. My mama told me I better go to college. All them scars,
you're right,
man. I mean,
you're
them
right.
Kids got real scars, and they mental. See, with a scar on your body, you can just cover it up. That mental scar, it affects who you become.
You're right, Gary.
That's how powerful
right.
it is. It affects who you become. Because now, instead of you following your dream, you just barely getting back. Barely getting back. And I'm like,
come
on now, follow your
dream. Yeah.
But somehow or another, if they keep talking to somebody who really cares, because that's really what you need to do, is get people around people who really care and who can believe in them from their point of view, not from the world point of view. Because the world point of view is designed to get you to a J-O-B for life. I call it the 40-40-40 plan. You work 40 hours a week, do it for 40 years, and you get 60% of your pay that you used to make. They take 40% off of it because that's what Social Security is. But guess what? They have already tested and found out that at least 20 to 30% of the people aren't going to make it to Social Security. So they get to keep the money.
It's a gamble.
No, but it's even bigger than that because they know this. They get to use the money now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then they're broke when
you get that age to collect. That's right. So, I mean, it's something that we just have to try to – we got to change our thinking. We got to start challenging our beliefs, and we got to start asking ourselves, if I'm not successful by 40 – really, it would help if you did it at 20. But I'm saying for some of the older ones out there, because we got older ones out there too. If I'm not successful at 40, and I'm talking about financial, I ain't talking about just – because really you're successful even if you don't have any money and any other things. Success is really your own opinion of success.
Perception,
but
yeah.
To be successful financially, you need to go back and ask yourself, what's wrong with my thinking? Because there got people – you have people right now – Matt is one of the best examples. They're making big money in more than one business, which is multiple
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I just came up with something recently. I said, think about it. What a person really needs to start out thinking is dream, team, and stream. Because if I got a dream, give me a team, and then I can have multiple streams.
Yeah,
because you need multiple streams of income. Most people have at least five or six bills. One job ain't going to cut it. That's why the finance company send you all of those. I was in line behind somebody yesterday at Walmart. You know how many credit cards this joker had?
Oh, gosh.
15 credit cards.
Oh, my gosh.
15 credit cards.
And they all maxed out, probably.
We know that. And guess what? This how you know it's a joke. He tried 6 cards before one took.
Oh, wow.
I had to stand in line behind him. He's trying 6 credit cards. I'm like, man, cut all of them up and just stick with 2. One for personal, one for business, and let it be. I'm like, let it be. Because this is crazy. Just think about it. He had to do that everywhere he go. He's putting out 5 and 6 cards. It's almost like he doing the lottery stuff. Oop, put it in. She looked at him. It declined. I mean, he did it 6 times. Decline, decline, decline. He said, I know some on one of these. It was hilarious. I'm like, I can't believe this boy do. And then, right after she gave him the receipt, I got about 15 of them. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I don't understand.
Now that's right.
We got to challenge our thinking, Brenda. Our thinking is what's wrong. Our actions and our circumstances. They come from our thinking. That's what Napoleon Hill was trying to tell people. You're thinking. You fix your thinking, your circumstances are going to automatically start to improve. Because think about it. I just attended a speech over the weekend. The guy said the only difference between a good day and a bad day is your attitude.
He's right.
And I'm like, that's right. And I'm like, he's exactly right. Because who said that just because it's raining is a bad day? But I hear people every day, oh, it's a terrible day. It's raining. How is it a terrible day just because it's raining? I'm like,
those plants are happy for that rain.
Exactly. So I'm like, we got to change our thinking, bro. I mean, it's just crazy how we set ourselves up to where, worst of all, because of school, because I tell people this, and they look at me crazy after I say it, but then after they think about it, they realize it's true. School is narrow-minded. You want to know how school is narrow-minded? One answer to every problem. That's narrow-minded.
Yeah.
One answer? Well, we already know that it's more than one answer, but they say, no, it's one answer. And if I put the wrong answer, one kid, I saw a caricature of a kid. The teacher asked him to solve a problem. He raised his hand and said, can I put my answer down, or you want me to put your answer down? That's crazy,
that's
man.
That's about right.
That's what those kids said.
I'll tell you, I want to ask you what you think about this, too. Matt and I talk a lot about the workforce, and you know, because you've studied history, you know the progression of how jobs have gone. And these people now, so much of this job force is going to be cut out because they're going to turn to the computers and the robots, and humans aren't going to be necessary for a lot of this work. And so
see,
we talk about that.
That.
How are we going to adapt?
Well, but see, the whole thing is that they didn't let the people, because some people still don't understand that we have left the industrial age. The industrial age had the big paying jobs. It had the pensions. I mean the real pensions, not no 401k. 401k ain't nothing but a savings account. People think, oh, I got retirement. I got 401k. That's a savings account. The banks have found out a way to get to your money. Because you're not going to use it until you can't use it until you get to a certain age. They using it before you get to that age, because all they got to do is say it's there. They don't understand that banks deal with numbers more than they deal with money. Because I tell you that a million is in there, I don't have to have it there until you need it. You can walk into the bank right now, and they don't have no money. I'm talking about physical money in your account. Because even the paper money is not real money.
Right.
But who told us that paper money was real money? School. Real money is physical. It has to be tangible. It's a house. It's a car. It's a gold coin, not paper, because the paper, they print it out every day. They go call the Fed, hey, we need another $1 million. Out of thin air, they print paper. But that's not money. So we gotta get it to where we start seeing ourselves as a particular person, and that's going to decide what we do. And once we understand that, we'll know better how to adjust to how when there are no jobs, man can create jobs, but he has to have his imagination to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember there being a program for tarot reading. Is there one? I haven't heard of one.
I'm sure there probably is.
I haven't heard of one, but I mean, and think about the people in personal development. They don't really have a problem for personal development. Jamal, he was trying to come up with something before he left us, and a few other people, they have their own. But I'm like, it ain't. You don't go to college. I'm gonna be a personal development. They don't have that because the big industrialists were in charge of everything. We don't call them industrialists now, but they're in charge of everything now. So think about it. A wealthy person, he has to deal with the American economy, but he has an economy of his own also. That's why he ain't crying when the gas go up $2 because he already got that covered. I was working with a guy in insurance. His name was Jimmy Douglas. And he told me something that blew my mind. Based on how I grew up, anything could be an emergency. But when I talked with Jimmy said, Gary, I don't have that many emergencies. I was scratching my head. I'm like, man, what you mean you don't have no emergencies? He said, when you got money, it's not an emergency.
He's right.
I mean, think about it. If the engine go out on the motor and it costs $2,000 to get it fixed, but you got $10,000 in the bank, is it an emergency?
Nope.
I don't think I'm calling it an emergency. If I got $10,000 in the bank and it's only $2,000 to get it fixed, I'm not calling. But that we was coming from two different worlds.
I came from your world, Gary.
Exactly. So we got to try to reprogram our mind toward, number one, there's no such thing as good and bad days. Because Shakespeare even said it before the guy who I went to speak. He said, there's nothing good or bad. Thinking makes it so.
Yeah.
See? So we got to take control of our things. See, what happened when we went to school, they didn't tell us, we didn't ask, but we gave them control of our minds.
And true.
That's why I have such a big problem with, is because they're taking the kids' mind and saying, hey, this word means that. They're installing beliefs and standards that don't serve me. And I'm not going to really understand that it's not serving me anymore. I mean, it's just like tricycles. A bicycle with training wheels. People ain't told that in school, some of that stuff they teaching you is training wheels. And it's ironic that they do call it training. When you get to 18 and 19, take some of the beliefs off. Because beliefs, I'm going to start using that too. Some of your beliefs ain't number training wheels. And how you look like 25 years old riding a bike with training wheels. You look really funny riding a bike with training wheels, and you 25 and 30 years old. So we got to take them training wheels off, those beliefs that I can't afford it. How come I can't afford it? Robert Kiyosaki, he said it. He said, my poor dad, he always would walk around saying I can't afford it. My rich dad, he changed the question. He made it into a question. instead of making a statement. And see, our mind was designed to be a solving machine. So it was good that the rich dad told him, change that same statement that he just made and put it as a question instead of a statement. So he took, I can't afford it, and said, how can I afford it? Now your mind goes to work for you. That's what they don't teach at school neither. Our subconscious mind is our personal secretary waiting to help us. But we have to put in the right information. It ain't no different than a computer. It's amazing how they took all the things about the human mind and produced a computer that operates on some of the same ways. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. If you're Googling and you misspell a name, well, you got some of the programs that'll tell you that, did you mean this? But sometimes you don't even get that to pull up. Sometimes you'll get an error screen or something like that. So you got to be particular on how you put in your computer, which is your subconscious mind, because if you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind, it comes up with all the reasons why you can't afford it, and you start telling it to other people.
Yeah.
But if you say, how can I afford it, it's going to say, well, I can sell this here. Oh, I can do that. I can work an extra hour with this. I can start a business. You got 20 different Ty Lopez, he said one of the things that he hated about school was the fact that they don't teach brainstorming. He said, if you just learn how to brainstorm a problem or a situation, that one thing can help change your world, because your mind is designed to give you ideas. So if you ask a question, think about it. If you say, how can I start a radio show? Your mind say, go to the computer. I mean, the site that you need to go to will automatically start coming on the screen, because you already decided on your definite of purpose. Everything is waiting for you to make your move, because once you said that you wanted to find that information, it goes out and seek that information. I do a lot of research.
Yes.
I'll be researching something on personal development, a school article will come back, and it's on something that I was looking for. But I didn't Google for that. I wasn't Googling for that information, but it came up because your subconscious mind is like, well, you're on the computer anyway. Might as well give you this information too. I'm serious. It's amazing how it works like this. And another guy said this. It says, a cell phone comes with a manual for operating. A toaster comes with a manual for operating. The mind didn't come with an own software. And that's our problem, right? That's our problem. It didn't come with an own operation. If it would have came with operation, a manual, maybe we wouldn't be stuck like this. But because it didn't come with a manual, everybody wants to send you to school to where you don't necessarily receive the information that you need, because you got to realize they have a hidden agenda. Their agenda is to replenish the market. That's basically the workforce. They want to replenish the workforce because they know people going to die. They know people going to leave town. They want to replenish the workforce. But the problem with that is that there are not enough jobs to go around, even if they wanted to. So they came up with the idea of, we're going to get the best, because the people who are the best making A's and B's. But I just read a book, I was listening to it, by Sam Carpenter. I put that out on Facebook too. He said the college is no longer a reasonable source for determining if people are literate and all that stuff that they used to use college for.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if they're not even using it, because, I mean, think about it. A bunch of companies are starting to take people without the degree because, number one, money. They'd be like, we can get this same person to do this same job. Because that's when they came up with the term, you're overqualified. like, you know, you told me to go get the degree. How you going to tell my mom I'm qualified? Make you want to lie and say, I ain't got no degree. Well, I ain't got no degree. I just lied. I ain't got no degree. It's the truth, though. I mean, they tell you to go get the degree. You go get the degree. Now you overqualified. But you still want to work there. You still willing to work. But they say, no, sir, you're overqualified. And I'm like, that really has to be a hurting feeling to know that you got turned down from a job because you overqualified, even though you probably would have did a good job.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, you're $40,000 or $50,000 in debt.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't understand why they continue to do it that way, especially since they have come up with the scheme of, it's kind of like bait and switch, because this ain't the first time it's been done. During Napoleon Hill, he talks about it in his book, how we're using unemployment agencies more than they were using college. Because think about it. At least in Monroe, I know for sure. I ain't going to talk about other states. The unemployment agencies are king. You're not going to get that job until you go through that. The unemployment, they send everybody through an agency. They don't even, it's like they getting a kickback. They're like, well, we just going to send y'all to the agency. And what's so wild about it is that they get to choose which agency they send you to. So it's crazy. I mean, it makes you want to say, hey, it might hurt, but I need to come up with my own thing, because they ain't paying number minimum wage. What I'm doing all this, pee in the cup, jump in the hoop, roll over, bow down. I'm like, it's laughing, but it's serious. When you
I know it
come
is,
up with
but
your
you
just,
you got
thing,
away, Gary.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the whole thing is we start mining our minds like they used to do for gold. Ideals are there. We
yeah.
just got to take the time. Get away from the entertainment. I mean, just overbombarded. I mean, think about it. Every week there's either a football game, basketball game, or a baseball game. There's the movies. I mean, when are you going to improve yourself if you're so busy going to the baseball, going to the basketball, going to the football, going to the movies, going to the... That's time that you could have put into doing something else. I mean, one guy said that you can actually write a book in a weekend. But you got to stop doing that other stuff in order
yeah.
to use that time to write that book. And the beauty of the book is that you can sell a book. Even if you sold a book for just 99 cents on Amazon, that's a residual income.
True.
So while that book making money, let's go sit down and birth another book. You can come up with 30 or 40 books, and there goes some income there. And guess what? It's all stuff that you already know. I ain't telling you to go write a book. Well, he wasn't telling you to go write a book about something you didn't know nothing about. I mean, some of the stuff that people know, they sitting on a gold mine because they assume that everybody else knows it.
You know,
Starbucks is one of the best examples. Everybody else had coffee. We don't need enough coffee. They jumped out on a limb and they went and made a coffee company anyway, and look how much money they done made off of coffee. Even though everybody said, man, they got coffee at the supermarket. They could have said, we ain't going to open up because they got too much coffee at the supermarket already. And that's what we do. We're going to tell ourselves that somebody already wrote a book on this. They didn't write your book. We gotta start thinking different.
I don't know if you heard it, Gary, but my very first episode, I had a caller call in, and he was stuck He was wanting to write a book, and he had that same train you were just saying. Well, who would want to read a book by me? Now, I got to alert us. We're down to about 4 minutes here, so we're going to have to start wrapping up here. But what you just said was spot on.
Right. And it's the truth, because we have been, and that's the shame of it. The kid does it to himself. So you can't blame the teacher. You blame the system that put the kid in an environment to where he sits there and beats himself up. He go to first period, makes a DRL. Told you was a dummy. I told you. He's saying it to himself. I told you was a dummy.
Yeah.
You need to quit trying. You're a dummy. You're a dummy. He go to second period. He takes a test. He make another L. I told you was a dummy. You need to quit trying, man. Quit trying. You're a dummy. You gonna always be a dummy. And he constantly playing it over. And guess what? His mind, subconscious mind, accepts it. And now he starts living that role. Stephen Covey, again, in his book, The Seven Habits of Effective People, he said, you don't need to beat that child butt. You don't need to give him all these outrageous chores. He said, you need to give him a new identity of who he is and can be.
That's perfect.
That's what you need to give him. Give him a new identity. He said, he's acting like that person that everybody talks. He's acting like that dumb student. He's acting like that mischievous child. He's acting out what he's been telling himself, what everybody else been telling. He's acting it out. So we need to try to give him a new identity of himself, and it starts with him. Start complimenting him on stuff that he's good at already. I mean, reinforce some of the good stuff that he's doing already.
I'm going to have to get you back on here because we're just about to run out of time. I'm going to have to get you back.
But that's one of the biggest keys, because we live up and down to whatever we feel our identity is. If I feel like I'm something, I'm gonna act that out.
All right. Well, Gary, it has been a pleasure having you and our audience. Any of you guys, I'm sure he's got you fired up. Go check out his weekly blog at the MonroeMediaManifesto.blogspot.com. You can see exactly the link on our show description. And next week we're going to have Miss Luann Hunt. She's an indie singer, been quite successful doing things her own way in the musical world. And also, if you want to check out more on Mystical Empress and our services, you can go to mysticalempress.com. Or mystical, you can write at mysticalempress@gmail.com. Also, real quick, I want to let you guys know we've got a big New Age show coming up next week in Denver at Denver Mart, the Body, Mind, Spirit Celebration Fair. We're going to have a huge booth there. We'll be doing readings all weekend. I've brought out my artistic side with the booth and designed a fairy booth. It's a life-size, gigantic, Alice in Wonderland-ish type of booth. Real interesting to look at. But Gary has done a great job today, and he's very, very passionate about the work he does and the research he does. And go check him out. He's also on Facebook, too, under Gary-O-Blanson. And just want to thank all of you guys for being here today and for sharing our excitement and our passion along the lines of law of attraction and the educational system. And I will get Gary back because I've enjoyed the banter back and forth, and I really like listening to Gary's passion. Gary, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, girl. I'm looking forward to coming back because I feel like we have a calling. We're not just doing work. We're doing a calling, especially for our youth, because they got to take our place. And like you said, it's too many of them who taking the easy road out and just living with mom. And what happens when mom dies and then ain't nobody paying the rent and stuff? They got to move out.
Yep. All right, Gary, we're out.
All right. Peace out.
Peace out. Bye-bye. Mystical blessings to everyone. Bye-bye.